Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointsTC.
The Hard Shoulder.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range. Celebrating 100 years of passion for the road. Recharge your soul.
Now, the UK Chancellor Rachel Reeves has announced the latest budget in the UK, and it has not come without massive scrutiny. To chat through what has happened across the pond, I'm now joined by broadcaster, political commentator and author Ian Dale. Ian, you're very welcome to The Hard Shoulder. And look, before we get to the substance, I suppose, of the budget and how it was delivered, we have to talk about what happened prior to Rachel Reeves' speech. It was all really gazumped, I suppose, because of that early publication of the OBR analysis of the budget. How did that happen and how did that go down?
Well, nobody quite knows how it happened. I mean, I don't think it was deliberate by somebody at the OBR, but as usual, I imagine deputy heads will roll. And it came out about 45 minutes before Reeves got up on her feet to make her speech. So you had the ludicrous sight on BBC of the economics editor and the political editor effectively reading out all the budget measures before Rachel Reeves got up. That's quite serious because this is market-sensitive information. Rachel Reeves started her speech by denying it was any responsibility of hers, and it was entirely down to the OBR. She was clearly furious, as she had every right to be.
Okay, so we got off to a pretty bad start, but you and I were talking a couple of weeks ago about your book, actually, Taoiseach, and we were talking about this upcoming budget and how important it was to the Labour Party, and you said you were calling it the budget that could sink the Labour Party completely before it was even announced. How was it received today?
Well, it could have been worse, I think, is probably the best you can say, because she didn't put income tax up directly, which would have been a breach of their manifesto pledge, but she did freeze the income tax thresholds. So millions of people are being dragged into the upper rates by 2028, 2030. So she has put up income tax sort of by stealth, like, and I think that's going back to haunt her. This was a budget full of tax rises. And if producing economic growth is your main aim, you don't put up taxes. But that's what she did. She showed no understanding of how business works, how to get the economy motoring. And I think it's actually going to be a budget that costs quite a lot of jobs. She's put the minimum wage up, for example, for 18 to 21-year-olds by 12%. Now, people in that age group will think that's fantastic. But if you're an employer, the minimum wage now for over 21-year-olds is now £26,500 a year. And there'll be many small businesses that just cannot stomach that. And I had people on my radio show last night basically saying, look, we are going to have to lay people off because of this, because we can't afford it.
But she did bill this budget, I know, as the budget for future growth, and it's sort of a long-term plan here, and she's saying, you know, we need 4 years to steady the ship and balance the books. But she did also say that this was going to try and mitigate or, you know, address the cost of living crisis, which we're experiencing here and you're also experiencing in the UK. I mean, do you think people will feel any better off after this?
Well, a lot of the analysis shows that if you are earning under the average wage, you will be slightly better off. But people earning above won't be. Now, she says, well, the people with the broader shoulders should pay more. Well, that's all very well. But the top 1% already pay 30% of income tax. And if you provide too many disincentives to people at the top end, frankly, they'll leave the country. And the signs... We have more millionaires leaving Britain now than any other country apart from China and Russia. That is not a record to be proud of.
I mean, the one thing that the Labour seem to get hit on time and time again. They get criticised for it, they get tackled on, is that they've come into government after all of these times on the opposition benches without a vision, right? And that they've been sort of unable to bring the people with them because they can't paint a picture of why they're doing what they're doing and the kind of Britain that they're trying to create. Did they manage that at all today? Did you think, did they handle the delivery and the messaging around this budget any differently?
No, not at all. I think that is a real problem for them. And I mean, Rachel Reeves put in a good performance, performatively. I mean, it was a very political budget. I mean, she spent half the time slagging off all the other parties, which you don't normally do in a budget speech. It's normally a parliamentary occasion rather than a party political occasion. But Kelly Bazenot, the Tory leader, she certainly gave as good as she got. I mean, she was on fire in her response. But it's always difficult for an opposition leader because they don't necessarily have the expertise of the Shadow Chancellor, and they have to react to a budget that they didn't really know what was going to be in it necessarily. Now, today, she did have a bit of advance notice as to what was going to be in it, and she used that to her full advantage.
And what about reform? What was their reaction to all of this? Because one of the other things I saw in that budget was that growth for the next 4 years, I know it was sort of forecast upwards in the short term, but over the next 4 years was downgraded majorly. And it all just, I felt, looking at it, felt a bit bleak. What have they been saying?
Well, it's been bleak right from the beginning, and they got a lot of criticism when they first came in for being all gloom and doom. And you don't encourage people to invest in the economy if you're full of gloom and doom. And I mean, reform, I mean, haven't really featured much in the headlines today. She had a few digs at Nigel Farage for the fact that his Welsh leader had been convicted of being bribed by the Russians. So that was all that she mentioned about them, and they've been sort of spluttering a bit, but they haven't really garnered many headlines today.
All right, Ian Dale, thank you for bringing us that insight into that budget in the UK today, the second budget for the Labour Party for Rachel Reeves, and it doesn't sound like it has been that well received. Now, one of the measures suggested within the budget today, or sorry, one of the measures announced within the UK budget today was a tourist tax that is going to be introduced across England, similar to the one already in effect in Scotland and in Wales. The tax will be imposed on accommodation and the funds raised will go back into local transport and infrastructure. So considering this latest development in England, does that mean it will come into place in Ireland too? Well, to discuss this, I'm now joined in studio by the President of the Irish Hotels Federation, Michael Magnier. Michael, you're very welcome to the programme. So first of all, when you heard this announcement from Rachel Reeves today, what did you think?
Yeah, good evening, Ciara, and good evening to your listeners. I think it was well put by the Chief Executive of the UK hospitality industry, Alan Simpson, when he said he was incredibly worried about the impact on the sector. So the notion of introducing a tourist tax, and let's be clear here, it's a bed tax on visitors to come and stay in your hotels or your guest houses, whether you're from any part of the world, locally or internationally, just absolutely makes no sense, particularly at a time in the UK where there's a cost of living crisis and now you want to tax people even further. It makes no sense whatsoever. And even though the Mayor of London outlined that it would improve the tourist experience, and indeed it would help the overall experience for visitors to the city, he also goes on to say that it could be designed for over tourism and as a barrier to ensuring that London and other parts of the UK don't suffer from over tourism. Here in Ireland, we're not in that situation right now. We haven't recovered with tourism numbers into Ireland from the pre-pandemic levels in 2019. So to have a notion or a suggestion that there would be a bed tax introduced in Dublin or any part of Ireland makes absolutely no sense.
But do you think it's inevitable? We have one now in England, in Scotland, in Wales. We also have it in Austria, Germany, France, Italy, Portugal, Switzerland. We're a bit of an outlier.
Well, just because other parts of the world have other types of taxes, it doesn't stand to reason why we should introduce taxes here in Ireland. And I think just to put it into context, it's important for everybody to be aware of. You know, the hospitality and tourism industry employs 270,000 people. There's 69,000 of those ambassadors working in the hotel and guesthouse profession. And it stands for 11% of the working population. So if you were to take Dublin as an example, which is in the region of 9.5 million beds, beds available for sale each year and applied a simple 5% tourist or bed tax, that would raise almost 60 million for the local authorities. 60 million then that would be taken out of visitors' pockets, whether they're from Kildare or Kilrush or indeed as far as away as Sri Lanka or the United States. And that money then is not available to spend in our local restaurants, in our local taxis, and other parts of the society that has to work economically as well. And
why not? Why is it not just an additional spend rather than actually, you know, taking away from what you'd intended to spend in the first place?
Well, because we're hearing all the time that people have less money in their pockets. So therefore, to ask them to pay more, it makes absolute no sense. And then, of course, the question, Ciara, needs to be asked is, you know, the role of the local authority is to maintain the public realm for our visitors coming to our cities and towns right across the country. So what would this money be used for? And we have seen no clear indication here in Ireland around any suggestion that if a bed tax was introduced, what would that money be actually used for?
And really, well, it is going to be ring-fenced in the UK. It is the mayor who gets to decide what the amount is, and it's going to go back into local infrastructure, local transport system. If it was, if the revenue here could be ring-fenced for tourism infrastructure, for better public transport, for cleaner streets, wouldn't that actually benefit the sector that you represent?
Well, we don't know. It's as simple as that. That's what they're doing and suggesting they will do in the UK. And again, we can see today a very unpopular move, but the reality of it here in Ireland, any suggestion or notion around applying a bed tax makes absolute no sense. And the other element that we need to be mindful of as well is that when you operate in an environment where the cost of doing business is so high in this country, we need to look at efficiency. And maybe local authorities, with the help of technology that exists now, sustainable initiatives, maybe they can look at their own operating expenditures and try to make them more efficient to allow them have freed up resources, then financial resources, instead of applying a bed tax to visitors right across the country and around the world.
So you think there's efficiencies that can be made within the local authority and that's the money that can be used to be put back into cleaning our streets, for example?
Well, in any business, efficiencies can be introduced, and local authorities are not just like businesses. They have to be run like businesses. They have operating budgets, they have incomes and deficits, so they need to look at their efficiencies and see how it can be made possible. But looking around here in Dublin as well, to look at its commercial rates are a significant part of how the local authority raises its income. And there's a BID, which is a Dublin Business Improvement District. That's an additional 5% that all ratepayers pay here in the capital as well. So isn't that enough? I mean, why should we turn around and ask our consumers nationally and internationally to pay more for their visit to the country? And I can also give you an example. Back in 2012, Ciara, when a departure tax was introduced as part of the austerity measures, and it started off at 10 euro per passenger, it was then moderated to 3 euro per passenger, and in 2014 that was brought to zero. After that move was reduced to zero, we saw 2.1 million additional visitors to Ireland because of the removal of that, and we don't want to put barriers in to tourism in this country.
Are you saying that taking away that 10 euro charge at Dublin Airport, that was enough to bring an extra 2 million?
2.1 million extra visitors. So why would you introduce a tax to visitors coming into the country? And as the Mayor of London correctly said in his statement today, it can combat over-tourism. We've seen cities like Barcelona in Spain introducing a bed tax because there is over-tourism. We do not have that issue in Ireland.
But there are other cities like, you know, Paris or New York and Amsterdam. They have tourist taxes and they still do remain top global destinations. I mightn't particularly like going to Lisbon and paying my tourist tax, or particularly enjoy going to Barcelona, and that little bit is added onto your end of your bill. But I don't know if it's an actual deterrent. I don't know if I would say an extra tenner on top of everything I've already spent, booking my flights, paying top dollar for your accommodation, pay for your food, if it's the tenner and tourism tax that makes me say, no, that's not the destination for me, realistically.
Well, at the end of the day, we're talking potentially 60 million euro here at a 5% bed tax, 60 million less available to spend in the local economy. And the evidence is there. It's not me just quoting figures off the top of my head. 2.1 million extra visitors came to Ireland after the reduction of that departure tax that was introduced into the country.
Is that not just maybe coincidental that the economy was doing better, the global economy had improved after austerity, that that's actually the reason, Michael?
I wouldn't accept that, because all indicators are to say that tourism in Ireland has been on a growth trajectory since then. But again, we saw the impact of the pandemic, and we need visitor numbers to come to our country. So therefore, I think, you know, it's maybe slightly disappointing to think that visitors to Ireland, they come and have a really positive experience. And then at the end of it, you know, if it's a couple that stay in a hotel for 3 or 4 nights and it's €10 per person for a night, that's an extra €50 that they're being asked to pay in a form of tax. I just think that's a little bit of a sting in the tail. Ireland, we are in the business of the welcoming the international visitor, the domestic visitor, and we want to give memorable experiences, not experiences when they check out to say, oh, by the way, we need an extra €50 from you here, when we could look at other ways in which we could be more efficient with the financial resources available to operating our country.
Some might argue, Michael, that the real sting in the tail is actually the cost of the accommodation. When you look down at your bill at the end of your stay, that that's actually the sting in the tail, what you're charging people to come and stay in hotels.
Well, right across the country, there are 800, 900 hotels and guest houses and many other accommodation providers. And we've had this conversation many times in the Irish Hotels Federation, where we are comfortable about the charges that we apply, because in Ireland, it's one of the most expensive countries to do business. And when you're faced with potentially 40, 50% of increases since 2020 in running a business, it stands to reason that Ireland is going to be an expensive destination, not just for our visitors that live and work in Ireland, but for international visitors coming in. And in fact, today we brought that up with the government, with the Oireachtas Committee on Tourism, about the barriers for doing business in this country, and also how we want to ensure Ireland remains open as an international visitor destination.
Okay, very briefly, I have to put some of these texts coming into us here on the Hard Shoulder line. I'm actually surprised at the amount of support for the tourist tax here. How many hotels have closed down in the past 5 years in Ireland? Hoteliers are making millions of pure profit in Ireland each year. Bring the VAT rate back up. I was in Italy 3 times, said another texter. I paid the bed visitor tax without even considering it 3 times. It is not a deterrent. And another texter, money is better in the hotel, sorry, in the local council's pocket rather than hotelier profit sheet.
Well, look, everybody's entitled to their opinion, but I can tell you, for every statement that one might claim that hotels are making millions, there are many hotels and they are just about surviving.
All right, we will leave it there. Michael Magnier from the Irish Hotels Federation, thanks for coming on to us here on The Hard Shoulder.
The Hard Shoulder.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range. Celebrating 100 years of passion for the road. Recharge your soul.
Hey football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2 times the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8-6-25 and 1-5-26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.